there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Due to the graphic nature of this murder case, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes dramatizations and discussions of murder, torture, and assault that some people may find offensive. We advise extreme caution for children under 13.
My people, I have grave news. We have gotten word from the Spanish invaders that Montezuma II, your one-time emperor and my cousin, has succumbed to his injuries and died. My cousin was a great warrior and strong leader, but near the end, he made his choices based on fear and uncertainty. This is why he is now gone. If I am certain of anything, it is that we must make our enemies pay.
But how, great speaker? They have sealed themselves in the palace. Our warriors cannot reach them.
They will come to us. Think, what was the one thing they asked of us, time and time again?
Gold! They wanted our treasures!
And even the gods cannot eat gold. They must be starving and dying of thirst. That will make them desperate. And desperate men make mistakes.
The last few days of June 1520 saw the Spanish occupation of the Aztec capital, Tenochtitlan, coming to an unceremonious close.
Hernán Cortés Pizarro found himself surrounded and locked in the palaces of Axiacatl, the old Aztec emperor. The Spanish and native Tlaxcala forces under his command still shared their mutual animosity towards the Aztecs, but even that alliance was beginning to fray under pressure.
As the Spanish told it, they had attempted to leave peacefully, using Montezuma II to negotiate with the angry Aztec people.
But it's likely that even the Spanish didn't believe Montezuma had any authority left over his people.
So it probably didn't shock anyone when Montezuma was hit with slings and an arrow during his final speech. However, when word reached the Aztec people that Montezuma had died a few days later, rumors began to spread.
And on the last night of June, the Spanish made the biggest miscalculation of their entire conquest.
A mistake that would lead to the loss of thousands of lives and the largest collection of gold and jewels in the New World.
This is Unsolved Murders, True Crime Stories on the Parcast Network. I'm your host, Carter Roy.
And I'm your host, Wendy McKenzie. This is our final episode on Montezuma II, the emperor whose death led to the fall of the Aztec Empire.
You can listen to previous episodes of Unsolved Murders, as well as all of Parcast's other shows, wherever you listen to podcasts. A new episode comes out every Tuesday. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and on Twitter at Parcast Network.
Some listeners have been asking how they can help support the show. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening.
The death of the Aztec Emperor Montezuma II has remained an unsolved mystery for centuries, swirling with more rumors than facts.
Historians with widely varying perspectives have tried to conclusively prove that Montezuma was either killed by his people or one of the Spaniards.
The distinction is particularly important as it will literally rewrite the history books. Well, typically, history is written by the victor, but there are those who consider it important to uncover the truth, regardless of what they find.
In some stories, even today, Cortez has been painted as the conquering hero of bloodthirsty heathens bringing civilization across the world.
Others have described Cortez as a greedy conquistador whose avarice doomed an entire people to extinction.
As we briefly mentioned in Part 1, Cortez had to justify why he was responsible for such bloodshed not only to his own king, but also to the entirety of Europe. If it was discovered that the Spanish took Montezuma's life on top of every other atrocity they committed, Europe would be forced to admit that Cortez was a brutal conquistador.
To explore what actually happened, we need to take a deeper dive into the immediate aftermath of Montezuma's death. In the summer of 1520, the Spanish were dangerously close to being overrun.
The Spanish knew that they were severely outnumbered with only 4,000 to 5,000 soldiers at their disposal.
A formidable force, to be sure, but in the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan, they were surrounded by an estimated 300,000 angry Aztec citizens.
When Montezuma died, their only negotiating tool was dead. Finding a way to escape without bloodshed seemed nearly impossible.
Cortez was left with very few options: engage in open battle with the Aztecs or attempt to sneak out at night. The answer seemed obvious, but the Spaniards wanted to walk away with more than just their lives.
Led by the infamously gold-hungry Cortez, the Spanish had been promised enough gold and treasure to make them rich for life.
And they certainly collected more than their fair share. Tearing through Tenochtitlan and the surrounding countryside, the Spanish had amassed an estimated 8 tons of gold.
And now that same gold was making it very difficult to leave. With no carts or horses at their disposal, the Spanish had no way to transport that gold dozens of miles to the safety of their ships.
They were left with an important decision. Would they leave the gold or risk taking as much as they could carry?
Few of Cortez's men were as zealous about the treasure as Alvarado, his captain and second in command.
But, senor, it would be a shame to just leave all of this here. We should stuff our pockets to the brim.
We should only bring what we can carry. The gemstones, perhaps. No treasure is worth our lives, Alvarado.
Then why did we do all of this? Why did we come here if not for the treasure? You cannot tell me we came across the world for nothing but blood and death.
It will all still be here when we return.
And if we do not return?
Then we will be dead, and no amount of gold or jewels will matter. We leave tonight. Come.
Suit yourself.
Alvarado wasn't about to let a little thing like common sense stop him from claiming his share of the treasures.
And as it turned out, neither would his men.
On June 30th of 1520, likely the same day on which Montezuma had died, the Spanish decided that it was time to attempt an escape from the city.
Only one thing gave them hope for success. They knew that the Aztecs didn't like to come out at night.
In the 16th century, the only sources of nighttime illumination were the moon, stars, and unreliable pine torches. Furthermore, the Aztecs believed that during the night, evil spirits with ill intent would roam the countryside and the crossroads of the empire.
After nearly a year amongst the Aztecs, it's likely Cortez picked up on their feelings towards the darkness and was now using it to his advantage. But like any good commander, Cortez made sure his men were prepared for an attack.
Cortez handpicked his best 200 men and made them the vanguard or the front line that would be able to cut through most opposition should the need arise. He trusted these men enough to place his mistress and native translator, Doña Marina, also known as Malinche, in their midst.
Following the vanguard, Cortez organized the Tlaxcala warriors and Spanish soldiers into groups, making sure to set up a heavily reinforced rear guard should the worst occur.
But you can't plan for human nature. Unbeknownst to Cortez, many of his men had stuffed their armor in packs with bars of gold.
Already burdened by weapons and armor, gold was an unnecessary and heavy extra weight for the Spanish soldiers to lug around.
I can't imagine stuffing one's pockets with gold would make for quiet marching either.
But they did it all the same, and just after midnight on July 1st of 1520, the Spanish attempted to sneak out of Tenochtitlan.
Though he had taken many precautions, one thing Cortez hadn't considered was the city layout. Much like Venice, Italy, Tenochtitlan was literally built on water and made up of canals and causeways that made travel by waterway more efficient than travel by foot.
Well, these canals made the walkways narrow, creating a bottleneck that brought the march to a halt.
The longer the escape took, the greater chance of their discovery. Then, the unthinkable happened.
Quickly and quietly, men. Your very lives depend on your silence and speed this night.
There! Look! On the walkway above!
We are undone!
The Spanish are leaving! The Spanish are leaving! Quick, before they escape!
All it took was a single Aztec woman taking a late night stroll to sound the alarm. An alarm which awoke thousands of furious Aztec warriors.
Hurry, men! Hurry! They're coming!
The battle was vicious, and it seemed like the Spanish were holding their own. At least at first.
War boats! They're in the canals!
We are overrun. The rear guard has broken off. They are surrounded and heading back to the palace.
The men are moving too slowly. What is wrong with them?
They didn't want to leave empty-handed. You promised them gold.
The fools! They've killed themselves! Abandon the gold in the lake! Hurry! It weighs you down! Look, they're sinking. What have they done?
The smarter soldiers quickly realized that the gold was a hindrance in battle and abandoned their loot. Those slower to understand were either easy targets for Aztec arrows or sunk into the depths of Lake Texcoco, taking their treasure along with them.
La Noche Triste, also known as the Night of Sorrows, was a massacre. Some accounts even claim that the losses were so heavy on the Spanish side that the dead bodies filled the gap in the causeway, turning the water red with blood and creating a bridge of dead soldiers on which the living could cross.
It's the only way. Hurry now, my love.
But the bodies...
They are dead. Do not let their sacrifices be in vain. Cross!
Will you join me?
Of course. Now go. You there, soldier! Please escort Doña Marina across. I must rally the men.
It was a grisly scene that would mark the only real victory of the Aztec peoples against the Spanish and their allies.
Cortez's defeat here had devastated his men. It's estimated that he lost close to 600 of his soldiers and nearly all of the 3,000 Tlaxcala warriors with him. Only a few hundred Spanish soldiers were left alive.
And all for naught. They had come searching for gold, but it was their greed that helped to destroy them. What gold hadn't been lost beneath the surface of the lake was soon reclaimed by the Aztecs. When the Spanish eventually returned to Tenochtitlan, they would never find an amount of gold even close to the treasure they had left behind.
As for the Spanish rear guard that had retreated, they managed to find themselves back in the palace where they had started. One story suggests the survivors of the rear guard found a further 300 Spanish soldiers still sleeping in the palace that would become their tomb.
Well, those men largely belonged to the forces Cortez had enlisted when he defeated his rival, Panfilo de Narvaez, on the coast a few months prior. It's likely that they hadn't fully integrated with the other soldiers and thus were left behind.
Unfortunately, being left behind meant certain death. With only a few hundred men, the remaining Spanish soldiers were overrun in a matter of days. The lucky ones were killed in battle.
The unlucky Spanish forces were sacrificed, one man at a time, to the Aztec gods.
But while the Aztecs savored their victory, Cortez licked his wounds and began to regroup. His next assault, just over a year later in 1521, would become known as the Siege of Tenochtitlan and mark the unofficial end of the Aztec Empire.
Montezuma's replacement and cousin, Cuitlahuac, died of smallpox before the Spanish ever returned. Even though Cuitlahuac was succeeded by Cuauhtémoc, the 11th and final emperor of the Aztecs, Montezuma II is often still referred to as the last official ruler of the empire.
The Aztecs soon faded into history.
But rumors still swirled about what had really happened to Montezuma II. A fascination over the actual events that transpired began to grow in the scholarly communities of Europe and eventually North America.
Perhaps the Spanish had told the truth. Montezuma had simply sustained too grievous an injury from his people and died days later.
Or, as many Aztecs suspected, perhaps one of the Spanish had put Montezuma out of his misery when they saw he could no longer be of use to them.
If this were true, the lies and manipulations of the Spanish conquistadors were much deeper seated than ever imagined. These lies were spread for one reason and one reason alone: to sentence a once great civilization to extinction.
Coming up, we'll look into the possibility that the Spanish lied.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
Now, back to the story.
While any number of Spaniards could have killed Montezuma in June 1520, there are really only two suspects worth examining: Cortez and his trusted right hand, Alvarado.
Thus far, we probably know more about Cortez, his exploits, and those around him than we do about Montezuma II.
As we've said, most of our details about Montezuma's death came from the Spanish. With such subjective primary sources, our analysis of the events are subject to interpretation.
Even historians can offer little more than speculation and educated guesses. It is within this wiggle room of the unknown that several historians suggest Cortez may have been directly or indirectly responsible for Montezuma's death.
Casting himself as the hero of his own story, Cortez's first-hand account of his expedition frames him as the conqueror of a heathen tyrant. Cortez may have begun his expedition as a mutineer, but he wanted to end his voyage as governor of the New World.
By the spring of 1520, tensions between the Spanish and Aztecs had been building for months. In part one, we discussed the massacre of the Cholulans by Cortez. At the time, Cortez was spurred to action by news suggesting the people of Cholula planned to attack the Spanish on their way to Tenochtitlan.
The Cholulans had welcomed the Spanish, but soon decided to attack instead of help. Unfortunately for them, Cortez learned of their plan and struck first. As we saw then, it took a serious betrayal of Cortez's trust to cause him to personally lash out and commit such violent atrocities.
Well, Montezuma may have done something similar.
What did his messenger say?
They claim that if you raise forces against Cortez, that Tenochtitlan will again be yours, Great Speaker. But how can we trust these foreigners? We did so once, and now...
And what choice would you have me make? Our people are miserable, and our enemies grow bolder. There will be nothing left to rule if we wait any longer.
Your answer?
Tell this Narvaez that I agree. I will support his efforts to capture the Spanish fugitive, Cortez. Now go.
As we covered in our previous episode, in April of 1520, Panfilo de Narvaez landed on the Spanish-controlled coastline of Mexico, 250 miles east of Tenochtitlan, with nearly 1,000 soldiers and a mission to arrest and retrieve a mutinous Cortez.
The moment Narvaez arrived, he began to spread the news of Cortez's traitorous deeds. The small community of Veracruz, founded by Cortes about a year prior, was quick to join his would-be captor.
However, Narvaez knew he would need more help against a well-entrenched Cortes. According to some accounts, Montezuma saw an opportunity to rid himself of Cortes and was only too willing to assist.
Taking a page from Cortes' book, Montezuma played the two sides against each other through a messenger. He was even able to stir some of his outlying territories against Cortes and his men.
It would actually be through Montezuma's dealings with Narvaez that Cortes eventually learned of his would-be captor's arrival.
Ask him if he knows this man.
Cortes asks whether you know the man before you or not.
Does a man know every ant he steps upon?
He won't give me a clear answer.
I know he knows him. Look, the man was carrying a note. He is some sort of messenger. Listen. Emperor Montezuma, should you deliver to me the traitor Hernan Cortes, you have my word that you and your people will be left alone. Signed, Narvaez. He's working with my enemy.
Why are you working with his enemies?
Because they are his enemies.
And who could blame him? According to Cortes, Montezuma had gone from a proud emperor to a Spanish pawn. He had lost everything because of Cortes.
It stands to reason that Montezuma's actions must have angered Cortes.
Cortes believed that he was in complete control.
And discovering a secret deal between two of his enemies may have been what it took to eventually act on his emotions rather than logic.
Taking steps to avoid capture, Cortes communicated with Narvaez, showing him that he had learned of his arrival while he planned his best course of action.
By May of 1520, Cortes left Tenochtitlan in order to surprise Narvaez on the coast. And even though he was gone for nearly 2 months, he still could have been furious once he returned.
Maybe even doubly so when he discovered that the law and order that he had left behind had been completely upended by Alvarado's attack on the Spring Festival.
That's when he sent Montezuma out for his ill-fated speech, and when that failed, well, with passions running high, anything could have happened.
What are you good for?
Sir, do you want me to send for Doña Marina? He can't understand you.
Out! Everyone out! The Emperor and I have unfinished business.
I may not speak your tongue, but I can hear your anger. Are you surprised by my people's fury? They will sacrifice you all to the gods before long.
Silence! Your words couldn't help you before, and they won't help you now. What use are you to me? A leader without his people is nothing.
If you are going to kill me, then do it!
You do not speak! If you speak again, I will—
End this! I am ready.
I told you not to interrupt me.
While anger at a recent betrayal may have weighed on Cortes' mind, he was also being assaulted on all sides by angry Aztec warriors and citizens of Tenochtitlan, which must have taken a lot of his focus.
Even if Cortes was angry at Montezuma, it's unlikely that he would have personally carried out the murder. Cortes saw himself above the Aztecs in all ways and probably would have seen the act as beneath him.
But the British Museum in London, England, held an exhibition in 2010 which included artifacts, manuscripts, and illustrations that suggested Cortes had Montezuma killed in a gruesome and public display.
It's ready.
I have done everything he has asked. What more could he want from me?
He wishes to know what you want from him, should I say?
He will find out soon enough.
Ah, this is not another request. This is an execution.
Montezuma II of the Aztec peoples. For the crimes of cannibalism, heathenism, and for conspiring with my enemies, you have been sentenced to die. As punishment, the gold you love so dearly has been melted down and will be poured down your throat until you are dead.
He said for your crimes of—
My only crime is not listening to the fears of my people when I had the chance.
Hold him! Hold his mouth open, tightly now. I don't want you to spill a single drop.
Yikes. Death by molten gold sounds like a horrifying way to die.
But as horrifying as it might sound, it may have never happened. Cortes was driven by the pursuit of gold, so it seems unlikely that Cortes would waste gold murdering a captive. Of course, there is the possibility that a Spaniard other than Cortez was responsible for Montezuma's death.
While never considered a suspect previously, we feel the need to investigate one man as the individual potentially responsible for Montezuma's death. An individual who harbored a deep-seated hatred for Aztec royalty, Cortez's loyal lieutenant, Pedro de Alvarado.
Alvarado played a key role in the Spanish expedition to Tenochtitlan, known as Cortez's right hand during the expedition to the New World. Pedro de Alvarado was a cruel and violent man, even by conquistador standards.
While the exact details of Alvarado's violent acts have been lost to time, he was a regular advocate of inhumane and brutal tortures.
Hanging live victims over an open fire, testing the strength of swords on flesh, training dogs to hunt humans, and pushing people into pits full of sharp spikes are just a handful of the cruel punishments meted out by the Spanish.
And Alvarado was a proponent of all of them. Born into a family of minor nobility, Alvarado was expected to either join the priesthood or become a soldier. He obviously opted for the latter.
His blue eyes, blonde hair, and fair skin made him a curiosity in the New World. It even earned him the nickname Tonatiu, or sun god, by the Aztecs.
However, the first hints of Alvarado's violent tendencies toward the Mexica people came in April of 1518, during one of the first Spanish expeditions to reach Central America.
Under the command of the conquistador Juan de Grijalva, Alvarado showed his true colors.
That's enough screaming, Alvarado. You're fortunate I don't have you killed and dumped into a ditch.
I only did what any true conquistador would have.
You murdered those people.
For the location of their gold.
That you failed to obtain. It's barbaric. And that smell.
Why do you care? They were heathens.
And you are a soldier. Soldiers obey the orders of their commander.
All right, commander. What do you want me to do?
You will return to Hispaniola with a message. Spread the word about what we saw here. And you... you will never return to the New World.
Whatever you say.
What was that? Guard, this man hasn't quite learned his lesson. Continue.
During his first expedition to Latin America, Alvarado disobeyed his commander, and as punishment, was sent back to Cuba. Once there, he was to relay news of the discovery of gold.
We all know how that ended. By 1519, Alvarado had allied himself with Cortez and was on his way back to Mexico.
In the New World, his dedication and loyalty were quickly noted by Cortez.
However, for some reason, his often gratuitously savage behavior towards indigenous people was ignored.
Advocating for harsh measures at every turn, Alvarado was one of the loudest voices in support of an attack on the innocent men, women, and children massacred in Cholula.
It's not clear why Alvarado harbored such a passionate hatred towards the Mexica people, but as we discussed in part one, it wasn't a surprise when he ordered the slaughter of Aztec nobles at the Spring Festival. So it's easy to see why a man who supports senseless slaughter might have also been the first to lose his temper towards the Aztecs.
And if he lost his temper, there's no telling what he might have been capable of.
Señor Alvarado, the prisoner is supposed to be left alone.
And he will be. He'll be left alone with me, is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Watch the hallway. Make sure we aren't interrupted.
Tonatiu. The cruel sun god, come to finally finish what your master forbids you.
You know I don't speak your language, heathen.
I have seen you lurking in the shadows, waiting to strike.
You people are hardly human. I can't wait until we paint this city with your blood.
I can see you did not come here for words. So, come. Finish what my people started.
Don't move! Stop! Not another step! I'm warning you.
Sir, what happened?
You saw it. We couldn't do anything to help him.
I was in the hall when...
No! No! You saw everything. I was tending to his wounds and he died of complications. Understand?
It makes sense that Alvarado, who had likely wanted to kill Montezuma from the start, would want to finish the job.
And as a trusted lieutenant of Cortez, he would have free access to any prisoner.
With a history of violence, shunned by even some of his fellow Spanish, Alvarado makes sense as one of the clearest suspects in this murder.
But there is one final possibility to consider. Smallpox.
A silent murderer so devastating that it killed millions and aided in the downfall of the Aztec Empire.
Coming up, we'll take a look at this devastating outbreak.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Now back to the story.
In June of 1520, Aztecs in Tenochtitlan were entirely focused on the occupying Spanish forces in their city and the death of their emperor, Montezuma II. They had no idea that a deadly plague was about to sweep across the land.
Much like the plagues that struck Europe in the 14th and 17th centuries, respectively, smallpox was a powerful and deadly disease for those without immunity.
Smallpox is characterized by high fevers, headaches, and vomiting, as well as severe abdominal and back pain. After a few days, these symptoms subside, only to be replaced by the infamous rash that quickly spreads all over the body.
While the average European mortality rate was about 30 to 35%, the Aztecs and citizens of Central America faced a nearly 90% mortality rate.
It was so bad that after smallpox struck the New World, the Aztec population dropped from around 30 million citizens to only about 3 million.
Without any natural protection from European diseases, smallpox effectively overwhelmed the Aztecs, Incas, and other Mexica peoples.
Strangely enough, it wasn't until 1520, nearly 2 years after the first Spanish expedition landed in Mexico in 1518, for the initial cases of recorded smallpox to reveal themselves.
So, the real mystery is, who was Patient Zero, and how did they reach the Aztecs?
Many might be tempted to point the finger at Cortes or one of his men. However, it wasn't until 1520 that smallpox appeared in Tenochtitlan, and Cortes had been wandering around the country for nearly a year at that point. That said, he was partially responsible whether he knew it or not.
Most records from the time period agree that the Spanish slave, Francisco Eguía, was the first carrier of smallpox to arrive in Mexico. Arriving on the shores of the New World in the spring of 1520, he was transported on a boat from Cuba by none other than Panfilo de Narváez.
Narváez was ordered by Diego Velázquez de Cuellar, the Spanish governor of Cuba, to capture mutinous Cortés and return him for trial. However, as a less experienced leader, Narváez wasn't prepared for Cortés's surprise attack.
Señor Narváez, we're under attack.
Damn him! Cortes has been too long in this heathen country. He no longer follows the rules of warfare.
Or maybe you were just outsmarted, Narváez. I suppose you thought hunting me in the jungle would be sport.
Do your worst, then. I am prepared to die.
Oh, come now. An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
How gracious of you. Allow me to dress myself and we can discuss business. Francisco! Francisco! Damn that slave! Where is he?
I may have stepped over him on my way here. It looks like he was caught off guard by one of my men, and well, they're searching him for valuables now. Though I don't suppose you pay your slaves well.
My dignity? My slave? What else will you take from me?
Oh, I can think of something.
Wait! You said an eye for an eye!
Precisely.
After Narvaez's defeat, he was taken into captivity while his men followed Cortez back to Tenochtitlan with promises of gold. However, the trek from the coasts of Mexico to the island capital of the Aztecs took weeks.
While Cortez barely touches on smallpox in his letters, he does briefly mention that he left behind a few soldiers who had fallen ill.
If one or more soldiers had contracted the disease, but were not yet showing symptoms during the march, they would have inadvertently carried the disease back to Tenochtitlan.
If we remember in part one, Cortez returned from the coastline on June 25th, 1520, to find that Alvarado had massacred the city's nobles and was fending off a full-scale revolt. Cortez and his newfound forces had to literally fight their way to the middle of the capital. This battle would have also introduced the disease to the Aztec people.
Smallpox has an incubation period of 1 to 2 weeks. However, in a people without any sort of natural immunities, there is a chance it could have developed more quickly. And there was one Aztec in particular that had more contact with the Spanish than anyone else in the empire.
Montezuma II. Not only was he a prisoner of the Spanish, but he was confined in close quarters with them. Doubly so once the conflict started.
So it stands to reason that 5 days later, the Spaniards would have no need to kill him themselves.
Tell me, how is he?
Dying. He's burning up. He shakes and sweats. I cannot do anything more for him other than pray.
The arrow must have been poisoned. Or perhaps there is dirt in the wound.
No, senor. This is something else. I have seen similar symptoms in Hispaniola, but...
Well? Out with it! What is it?
I believe he may have smallpox, senor. And if that's the case...
We are all in danger. Summon Alvarado. We must leave immediately. Tonight, if we can.
This scenario would explain the urgency with which the Spanish decided to leave the city. If they thought they were running from the onset of a plague, it wouldn't matter if the plan was reckless and hurried or not.
But if Montezuma truly was sick, Cortez could have simply left him to die as the disease ran its course. Of course, the Aztec sources claim that word circulated about Montezuma's death before the Spanish attempted to flee the city.
If the Aztecs can be trusted, this theory seems a little more far-fetched. However, we know without question that the Aztecs would be devastated by smallpox in the months to come.
By the mid-16th century, estimates suggest that between 40 and 50 million inhabitants of the New World would succumb to the disease. One native account recalls the horrific time in graphic detail.
It began to spread, striking everywhere in the city and killing a vast number of our people. The sick were so utterly helpless that they could only lie on their beds like corpses, unable to move their limbs or even their heads. A great many died from this plague, and many others died of hunger. They could not get up to search for food, and everyone else was too sick to care for them, so they starved to death in their beds.
Hundreds of thousands died in the capital alone, but that number soon paled in comparison to the millions that would die in the years to come. Essentially, a genocide by germs. It was a truly horrific moment in history.
Even the Spanish laying siege to Tenochtitlan were awestruck with the ferocity with which the disease tore through the city. Nearly a year later, in the summer of 1521, Cortez's chronicler, Bernal Diaz, described the Spanish re-entry to the city.
We could not walk without treading on the bodies and heads of dead Indians. I have read about the destruction of Jerusalem, but I do not think the mortality was greater there than here in Mexico. Indeed, the stench was so bad that no one could endure it, and even Cortez was ill from the odors which assailed his nostrils.
They certainly paint a vivid picture.
The eventual outcome was so terrible and so long-lasting that nearly 300 years later, the Spanish colony of New Spain suffered a series of catastrophic outbreaks themselves.
A philanthropic Spanish expedition was sent in 1804 to vaccinate as much of the population as possible and stop the recurring cycle of disease. Without a doubt, The disease was responsible for the death of millions.
And since Montezuma's death and the introduction of smallpox happened at nearly the same time, the idea that the two were connected might not be completely far-fetched.
But in 1520, it's hard to imagine that smallpox alone was responsible for killing Montezuma. Even without any immunity, the disease takes nearly 2 weeks to kill its victim.
And unless Montezuma went entirely untreated, it's unlikely that an arrow in the shoulder was the sole cause of his death. So it stands to reason that he had some help in his passing, even if he had contracted smallpox.
To avoid an outbreak, Cortes might have been willing to do anything in his power to limit smallpox's contact with his own men.
A pitiful sight. An emperor brought so low. Do not get too close, my love. I need you to listen and translate for me.
Emperor Montezuma, do you feel well enough to speak?
What does he want?
Ask him if he has any requests. I would not deny him that.
If there is something we can do, we are willing to grant a final wish.
My sons, please get them away from the city. It is the end of times, and I would not wish this upon them.
He asks that we take his sons with us when we leave.
I would have taken them with or without his blessing. They make for valuable prisoners.
He agrees. He will take your sons far away from here.
Good. Then I am ready.
Call for one of the guards, my love. Tell him to make it quick.
While smallpox was certainly responsible for the deaths of millions of indigenous peoples in Mexico, it isn't likely that Montezuma was the first to fall ill. So it stands to reason that one of the Spanish ended his life.
But even if it was eventually the Spanish that killed Montezuma, we can't refute that it was the Aztec people that injured him first. Neither side denies it happened, but instead differ on the circumstances under which it occurred, as they each try to frame themselves in the best light.
Our sources are limited, and suspiciously, most of them come from the Spanish.
Well, Cortes' letters are looked at as one of the best records of the conquest during that time period. However, Cortes was essentially a mutineer during his famous expedition.
Even the Spanish king barely acknowledged Cortes' letter as truthful. It wouldn't be until years later that Cortes was cleared on the charges of treason and mutiny.
Thus, we are left with only a handful of primary suspects.
I'm leaning towards Alvarado. A man so cruel that he enjoyed torture and bloodshed isn't someone who would hesitate to take a life.
That feels like the most likely scenario.
Which, if that is true, it would mean that the Spanish were not only gold-hungry conquerors, but also solely to blame for the genocide of the Aztec Empire and the cold-blooded murder of an emperor. This revelation would literally rewrite the history as it is currently accepted.
What makes this case so unique isn't that this murder was the first or the last in the Spanish subjugation of the New World, but that it altered the development of an otherwise civilized people.
Similarly, the cultural landscape of the Americas was forever changed by the Spanish influence in what would become modern-day Mexico.
This event became a precursor to more colonization throughout North and South America, eventually including the British settlements in the early eastern United States.
Because once Europeans saw the Spanish success in the New World, they realized they too could find riches, of all sorts, in what they had imagined were wild, untamed continents.
Cultural and political influence aside, this case is one for the history books. With nearly 500 years between then and now, we'll probably never know who killed the once great emperor, Montezuma II.
However, it is undeniable that his death and the death of his people changed the face of the world forever.
You can find Unsolved Murders and all of Parcast podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, and your favorite podcast directory.
A new episode comes out every Tuesday.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and on Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is by leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. Thank you so much for listening.
We'll see you next time.
If we live till next time.
Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, Maggie Admire, Paul Mahler, and Joshua Kern. This episode of Unsolved Murders was written by Edward Hamill. The amazing cast of voice actors include Jerry Courtney Austin, Harris Markson, Steve Pinto, Greg Paulson, Dan Velasquez, Tiana Camacho, Eddie Lee, Joe Hernandez, and Kai Jordan. Unsolved Murders stars Wendy McKenzie and Carter Roy.